This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Benchmark Maps. Unsure what to gift your adventure-loving friend this holiday season? Inspire them to discover a new state in the American West with a Benchmark Maps Road and Recreation Atlas. Be it Alaska or California, Nevada or New Mexico, Benchmark Maps come with all the information they'll need to plan their 2019 travels, like parks and monuments, campgrounds and RV parks, boating and fishing access, and more. And they're field checked for accuracy, so you'll know you're pointing them in the right direction. Learn more at benchmarkmaps.com and use coupon code SHEEXPLORES for 20% off your order. That's SHEEXPLORES, no space. Benchmarkmaps.com. A couple of announcements before we get started. I feel like that's becoming the usual, but I promise it won't be forever. Right now we have a She Explores 2019 listener survey going out for the She Explores podcast. It's a way to give your feedback on the last couple of years of the podcast and give some suggestions for the kind of content that you want to hear going forward. And secondly, next week's episode is going to be the last episode of 2018, and I'd really like to end the year on a positive note. So I'm asking for listener submissions, voice memos that share what you're looking forward to in your outdoor life in 2019. Both of these links are linked in the show notes. Thank you in advance for your time and your thoughts. They're both invaluable to me. Okay, on with the show. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
Like, I did see things, you know, and everyone has a different experience always, but I felt like I was seeing memories that I had never remembered before. Like, I remembered, like, hugging my mom when I was a little girl, and I remember, like, this orange t-shirt I wore when I was six.
Ask Hannah Andre, and she'll tell you she feels like the luckiest girl in the world. She's in love, she has a new dog, and easy access to the White Mountains of New Hampshire. She's also had two heart surgeries in the past year. Hannah's is a story about how quickly things can change and the ways in which nature can fill up your heart. For this episode, I actually got to talk to Hannah in person. She'd reached out via email, and when we hopped on the phone, I was surprised to learn that she actually just lives a couple towns away from me in New Hampshire. We went for a little walk together, got to know each other a little bit, and then sat down together in my sunroom. We got enough fresh snow that day, so you can hear the scrape of shovels in the background sometimes. So sorry for that. It's a familiar sound this time of year. It was fun getting to know Hannah in person, and I know you'll enjoy getting to know her too. When do you think this all started for you?
This story kind of began with boot camp, I guess. And I was living out in Colorado, which had always been a dream of mine. And I was working my way through this bucket list that I made when I was a little girl. And I was like this crazy adventurous little girl. I grew up like camping and like playing with all the boys, playing football and like baseball and, you know, running around and getting muddy. And I just wanted to do all these like extreme things, you know, like skydiving and ride horses and build my own treehouse. And I was really lucky. My family and my dad especially encouraged all of that. Just, you know, didn't expect me to be any kind of way, just kind of let me be. And then I just started adding to this list.
A bucket list feels like an odd choice for someone who believes in good fortune. Luck is happenstance. A bucket list is pretty deliberate. But Hannah had been working her way through that bucket list since she was 8 years old. It was made up of some more expected items and some less expected.
You know, go to college and travel abroad and go volunteer somewhere and move to Colorado was on it. And then join the military was also on it.
Hannah was young then, and by many accounts, she still is. She didn't have a full picture of what being in the military was like or whether there was a typical kind of person who enlisted. Growing up and into adulthood, she was really sensitive. She wasn't sure if she fit that mold. But joining the military felt important.
I really wanted to serve my country because I feel very lucky to live here and have a lot of the rights that we do. And I wanted to test myself. I'm really sensitive by nature, kind of a softie, and I just wanted to see if I could do it. And I wanted to prove that you don't have to be a certain type of way to do anything. You can do whatever you want in this life. You just need to like believe in yourself, and if you're lucky, have other people believe in you too. So I signed up and joined the Air Force.
It takes a certain kind of determination to follow through on goals you set as a kid. A bucket list can give you direction, but it can also put blinders on to other opportunities around you.
And it was good and bad because I always do what I say I'm going to do, but sometimes to a fault. Like, I don't know if joining the military was the path I was supposed to be on, and it turns out it wasn't. But I never wanted to live a life of like, what ifs and like could haves, and not saying that my way is the right way. There's no right way to live. But I just kind of started on this like really intense journey of like doing everything I said I was going to do.
Hannah was 23 when she joined the Air Force in late summer 2017. She'd been living in Denver, enjoying access to the outdoors, and playing on a rugby team.
By the time I was ready to ship to boot camp in Texas, I was really sad to be leaving, and I questioned my decision a lot. But it was just something I had to follow through with. I was going in to train for aerospace medical, which would essentially equate to like EMT, and my goal was to do special operations and do SEER, which they had just kind of opened to women, so that was really cool. And boot camp was fine, actually. It wasn't, you know, it kind of was like the movies, people are yelling at you, but it was really structured, and, you know, you get 3 meals a day, you go to classes, and I met a lot of great people who I'm still in touch with. A lot of strong women I met in the military. But I did always kind of have this feeling in the back of my mind, like, is this going to work out? Is this for me? Like, that's kind of when the story starts, the kind of crazy chaos. That's also like really beautiful because it led me here.
So the story starts again, 4 weeks into boot camp.
I guess I'd want to preface the story with, I don't have any animosity towards the military and towards the doctors there and like what happened, because I like to assume positive intent for everyone.
That day at boot camp is something Hannah called Trainee Immunization Day. She's allergic to penicillin, which the Air Force knew about. So they gave her an alternative, even though Hannah was worried that she'd have a similar reaction that she has to penicillin, called anaphylaxis.
We were just told, we weren't told much. We were just told that we had to take it to stay in. And it was just to like, it was because people were from a lot of different places coming together. So you just do what you're told and you don't ask questions because that's not allowed. Yeah, it was intense. And that part was like the movies, a lot of fear of like not knowing. And we're kind of just in a line and you kind of march and get jabbed with whatever shots they were giving you. So mine was a pill that I took. And I've always kind of trusted my intuition, and I'm not in a self-deprecating way, like not that I'm not confident. I just kind of hold my tongue until I feel like I have to. And that's changed because I've learned that not speaking up, like the term silence is violence. Like not speaking up is just, you're not anyone's ally if you're not your own.
So Hannah took the medicine and almost immediately went into anaphylaxis.
I remember the EMTs coming in being like, her heart's, you know, crashing, whatever, and then like coding, and then I flatlined in the barracks, my heart stopped. And I remember my airmen, airwomen, coming to my side and like holding me, and I was in my uniform, and I just like felt like I let go, like I couldn't do anything. You get brought back, you know, crash pads on my chest and my back, and they pushed atropine, and I just remember like feeling like ice through my veins. That's what I remember feeling in the ambulance. And I felt like I did see things, you know? And everyone has a different experience always, but I felt like I was seeing memories that I had never remembered before. Like, I remembered like hugging my mom when I was a little girl, and I remember like this orange t-shirt I wore when I was six. You know, and then I kind of came to in the ambulance, and I guess I was like flatlined for 17 seconds or something. That was like their claim. Mm-hmm. You know, she was gone and she came back. And then I was in San Antonio Military Medical Center for 10 days in ICU. Just day in, day out, kind of in this hospital room, no one really knowing what was going on.
No one knowing, so you not knowing either?
I was still in the military, right? So it's like you're a patient first, but you're still under oath. And that's when it gets really scary, because you can't leave and you don't have your phone, and no one, life just goes on for everyone else. Like my whole flight, they were still on in training, and it was like I was frozen in time in the hospital room. And it's funny because at that time in my life, I was the most positive I've ever been, I think, because I had to be. Like, I was like, I'm not going to make it if I go to this dark place in my head. So I kept a journal, and I made little flip books, sketches, and I couldn't walk at the time. So I would, like, race down the hallway in the wheelchair and get into trouble. And finally, my dad flew down and kind of demanded that he see me, which was really great. Yeah, and I did a lot of tests, and it was kind of deemed that this medicine had shocked the sinus nodes in my heart, and they were gone, just like not working. And so I have symptomatic bradycardia, which is just like my heart rate was dropping to 19 when I was sleeping. And I remember the doctors would come in, and they would make me do flutter kicks, so I'd get my heart rate up. And I'll never do another flutter kick in my life. I hate them now. But yeah, it was just really scary not knowing and feeling like I was just going to be there forever. But it also put things in perspective, because it could always be worse. It could always be better type deal. Feeling privileged to have free medical service, essentially, for 10 days. Yeah. And I finally was able to contact some family once my dad came down and kind of let people know. We didn't really know what was going on, but they had said that the damage was irreversible and that I was going to have to leave the military to get a pacemaker put in.
How did you feel about that?
I felt a lot of things. And I still do. I'm still trying to like make sense of it all. I always try to stay positive and balance, like, here I am. And also, I'm learning more recently to allow myself to be a little angry, be a little sad about what happened. And I felt happy that I was getting out to be with my family. I didn't really give myself time to mourn, like, this dream that I had of being in the military. God, yeah, and just so many things. I was scared of getting surgery. And I was, like, angry, I think, at my body for a long time I felt like letting me down. Like, I'd been active my whole life, and I didn't know what having a pacemaker was going to mean.
She had the pacemaker put in January.
You know, imagine you hurt your wrist, and your wrist is in a cast. And then after a few months, when you take the cast off, your wrist is kind of, like, it's a little paler than the rest of your body, and it's, like, not as strong. And that's how it felt for me having a pacemaker. And I also recognize that pacemakers, you know, it saved my life and it does a lot of good for a lot of people. But I felt like I was just invaded. Like, I felt so, I don't know, I just didn't feel like myself. I felt like there was this foreign object inside of me kind of bulging out of my chest. And I could see it every day. With like a little stack of cards, and you know, your body is like your home, and it felt like something, someone had come into my home that I hadn't invited there. And it was there because someone else put it there. And that was really hard to accept.
She got out of the military and hoped to pick up where she left off in Denver, but it just wasn't possible. She couldn't show up for her friends the way she wanted to, and she found herself struggling with PTSD from the trauma.
Right. You know, my time in the military was short, and I think so often in society, PTSD, you know, we think of, you know, brave soldiers deploying and really traumatic things, and what I experienced was traumatic, but sometimes everyday things can be traumatic, and I started getting really bad night terrors when I got back. And a part about my story, which I didn't go into so much detail about, was there was a period, getting out of the military is really scary because you don't know. There's something called sick bay in boot camp that you're held in until your paperwork goes through, and you either go back into boot camp and get recycled, which is you start over, or you get out. And I met people who were in there for months, and you just don't have contact really with the outside world.
So it's a place. It's a physical
It's a holding cell, essentially, at the barracks. And I was held there for 2 nights, and that was like my scariest time. Because you don't know when you're going to get out. You just don't know. Anyway, I started going to therapy in Denver because I just like couldn't really get through the days. Like I was scared of everything. I was scared of buildings that looked like hospitals. I was scared of anything to do with the military. I was scared that I was going to drop dead and my heart was going to stop. And I would have these like really intense night terrors, and I'd wake up like yelling and crying, and that had never happened to me before. And my therapist started telling me to like write down the way that I wanted my dreams to go before I fell asleep. And it helped. But I realized that it was kind of bigger than that. I realized that my PTSD kind of stemmed, you know, from what happened. And then it uncovers some things. It uncovers things in your life that you haven't faced. And like, what I believe in is that when you are more open to your suffering is when you can start healing. So I still struggle with it every day. I still have nightmares sometimes. And I kind of realized that it was like hindering my ability to have a relationship with myself and other people. And you just have to keep going, like even when it really feels like you can't. And, you know, I've touched that darkness. I know what that feels like. And you choose to just keep going every day and just find things to be really grateful for, which I'm so lucky that I have so many to be grateful for.
After the break, the impact that moving to Boston and working for Outward Bound had on Hannah. Want to start investing but feeling stuck? Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptocurrencies, all commission-free. I know you might be thinking, an investing app on a podcast about the outdoors? Well, I used to work in finance, and I know how intimidating that world can look from the outside. I love that Robinhood is an investing app that's more accessible. The design is easy to use and focused on education. You can learn how to invest while you build your portfolio. Plus, there are lots of articles about the stocks you might want to invest in, so you're armed with a lot of useful information before you make any decisions. And once you make a trade, it's commission-free, so you're not paying any extra fees. Robinhood is giving listeners of She Explores a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at explores.robinhood.com. That's explores.robinhood.com. Did you know that socks are the number one requested item at homeless shelters? And you actually can't donate used socks? Which is why Bombas donates one brand new pair for every new pair of socks that they sell. My appreciation for matching socks might be a new one, but the joy of fresh socks has never been lost on me. which is why I think it's so wonderful that Bombas gives back to help more people get that cozy, cared for feeling. I'm actually wearing their hiking socks myself right now. They're super comfy. And I'm actually wearing hiking boots too, which is unrelated, but it feels nice to be prepared. She Explores listeners get 20% off their first order by heading to bombas.com/explores and using code explores at checkout. That's bombas.com/explores, code explores, for 20% off your first order of incredibly comfortable Bombas socks that help you and someone in need as well. We're back.
Right, I got the pacemaker and I was like, I'm not going to let this change me either. And went back to running and hiking and boxing and trying to do all these things. And just nothing was really working out. And I kept winding up in the ER, winding up feeling really lonely. And that's when I kind of realized, like, I'm making this harder than it needs to be. And I need to own a lot of the things that are going wrong here. And I was kind of sick of my own crap. And I think that's when people make the biggest changes, when they're just sick of themselves. So I got a job at Outward Bound in Boston, and it changed my whole life all over again.
That's a lot of life changes for two years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hannah moved back east to be close to her family. She knew she had to let herself be open to their support. As she said, she got a job working for Outward Bound, tutoring kids on a harbor island in Boston. The kids needed help, just like she did. Little by little, she found her heart getting stronger.
Outward Bound is based on Thompson Island in Boston, which is one of the harbor islands, and we worked with Boston Public School students, taking them on expeditions like kayaking, around the islands, and then social emotional learning and science curriculum. So getting them out on this like 200-acre island that's so close to their city that they didn't even know about. So getting back in touch with nature through Outward Bound was so important to me and so healing in so many ways. And it was funny because Colorado is arguably one of those beautiful states, and I wasn't outside. I wasn't doing anything with that. And it wasn't until I came home and found Outward Bound, or Outward Bound found me, that I remembered what it felt like to really heal in the outdoors and really kind of try to live that lifestyle. And also work with students who are of all abilities. Kurt Hahn, who's the founder of Outward Bound, always said, your disability is your opportunity, something along that line. And that kind of resonated with me, like working with students from, you know, inclusion schools and just kind of saying, like, you can do whatever you want, you know, and I'm going to help you.
Hannah found that working with the kids was a little like looking in the mirror. What she said to them was often what she needed to hear herself.
It's funny, right? Because, like, when you're in a rut, you know all the things that you should do, right? Kind of, that are... drink more water and like go on a walk and feel better. And you just, sometimes you just don't. And that's okay. Cause I really do believe in chaos theory, like chaos being energy that's just pushing you to something, you know, better for you. And when I looked at these students, they really, really made me like feel alive again. And, you know, that might sound like a selfish reason for working there, but it really, when I poured everything into them, into this beautiful community on this island, things started feeling a little easier. And I don't think that's a coincidence. And right, like, would I be as harsh on these students as I am on myself? And the answer is always no, right? So it was incredible. I learned a lot about cultural competency. I learned a lot about working with students of, you know, all ages, demographic backgrounds, and also coworkers. I met like really beautiful people. Everyone had a story.
Could you feel yourself or your heart getting stronger?
Yeah, and it's, you don't have to put this part in if you don't want, but I always tell Hunter, my girlfriend, that ever since I met her, my heart got stronger, and I feel like she fixed my heart in a lot of ways.
Oh, that's so sweet. And yeah. you met her.
We met. Yeah, we met at the island. She was wearing this like highlighter yellow jacket, and it was snowing in April. We were all like at this dock in Boston, and I just remember her, and I remember thinking, "Uh-oh." But I do. Yeah, that's a great question, because ever since I started on that journey, my heart felt stronger in every single way. Like, I was nicer to my body, like body positivity, and I was kinder to people and let my family in a little more. And I fell in love, so far in love with everything again. And then the next thing I know, I'm, you know, getting a lot of tests done. When you have a pacemaker, you have to go to the hospital a lot just for checkups and stuff. And I had a lot of like really well-known cardiologists tell me at Boston Medical Center that they didn't think I needed a pacemaker anymore.
I've got to repeat this. About a year prior, Hannah's heart had stopped, and she was brought back to life only to have her heart slow down to the point of needing a pacemaker put in. And just when she's getting used to the trauma of surgery and the foreign object in the center of her body, she's told that she might be strong enough to have it removed. That is a lot to wrap your head around.
First time I heard it, I told my dad, you know, I don't want to think about this because I'm just getting used to this thing being in me. I'm just getting used to this being part of my journey. I don't want it out, was my first reaction. And also the, you know, the psychological and emotional damage from surgery and, you know, your body being invaded is often overlooked. And I'm really interested in mental health and wellness. And we were talking a little bit before about how like your muscles hold memories and your muscles hold trauma. And it's like after surgery is done, great. You know, you get flowers and snacks and everyone comes to visit you. But like, you know, how are you really doing? How's your heart actually? I was really worried to get another surgery because I was like, I finally feel good. I don't want to go down this road again. But the more tests that I got and the more that, you know, my life kind of filled up, I was like, maybe I don't need it, you know? So, yeah, that's the season ended for Outward Bound. And I just kept getting more answers that were leaning towards, you know, you don't need this pacemaker anymore. And we scheduled surgery.
Hannah had a few weeks between ending work and surgery, so she tried to spend as much time outside as possible.
And I just went to the mountains. I went and like hiked, and I went for walks, and I went biking. And
which mountains?
The White Mountains. Just went up to New Hampshire, and I love, they're my favorite. You know, Colorado's beautiful, and you know, I've like hiked in the Alps, and the White Mountains are my favorite, and they're just so healing for me. Yeah, surgery was kind of coming in the next few days. So just spent a lot of time with my girlfriend and my dog and my friends and just kind of tried to fill up my heart. Also started just like manifesting, saying a lot of just like positive things to myself. And I probably sounded crazy because I was just talking to myself, but saying things to my heart like, thank you. And, you know, like you got this and, you know, your heart is the central for all things. So just tried to get as ready as I could, but it still all feels like a whirlwind.
And I just kind of want to timestamp this. Today is Wednesday.
Yep.
And you had surgery on Friday.
Yes.
Last Friday.
Yeah.
Were you nervous at all about how it would go?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What were the risks? Like,
yeah, the risks of, so it's called an explant extraction surgery. The risks are tearing the lines of your heart because the leads are coming out. Excessive bleeding, which I had a little bit of bleeding, and it's all covered up right now, but it's a little bruised. And there were, I'd say, more risks than putting it in. And I was nervous about how it was going to change me because I had been researching a lot about like heart intelligence and how, you know, you can change once your heart is, they call it interrogated, which is an aggressive term, but once your heart is interrogated by anything. It can change you. And, right, I think change is a good thing. I think if you're not changing, then you're not growing. But it's also really scary. So I was worried about all those things. And I just remember what I always try to tell everyone, which is, like, can you control it right now? And if you can't, just try to be. Mm-hmm. And then I always, like I told you before, I'm the luckiest girl in the world. I can't believe this crazy journey, like, led me to Outward Bound. It led me to love, and I don't have a pacemaker anymore, which isn't something that everyone gets to say. So I really do feel lucky to have a heart that's restabilized by some miracle, but really I think was just from, like, filling up with nature and love. I don't know, I can't explain it.
What do you hope that other people, like, you know, in reaching out to me, sure, like, yeah, what do you hope that other people gain from your story?
Yeah, from, you know, my story is unique, but it's also maybe similar to a lot of people's. And I hope that people can get courage from my story and, you know, just not feel alone in whatever they're going through. And also, I hope people feel just inspired to just be themselves and to do whatever they want with their life, because, you know, I've literally seen my life flash before my eyes, and I couldn't help but think, like, I'm not done yet. I have so much left to do. So I hope people feel braver. I hope that people listen to my story and feel like they're just, like, getting a hug to be like, go ahead, just do the thing that you want to do. You know, it's not all that crazy. It's just life, you know, don't take it too seriously. And I hope that people feel a little braver about speaking up, because it took me a long time to share my story. But I don't think you can ask people for their stories until you share your own. So, yeah.
When you say braver, like, are there things that you want to do next that you're thinking about, you know, or is it more the one day at a time simple life, yeah, that you were thinking about?
I think it's a mix. Just be okay with life not working out according to plan all the time. Mm. And maybe, like, accept that the plan that's actually happening is better than the one you made. Like, just humble it down a little bit, because maybe everything that you picked isn't what's best for you. And braver in terms of just be braver with your life. And I think yourself, not so much, like, extravagant plans, like driving cross country or hiking a trail, but just, like, waking up and, like, how often do you look in the mirror and, like, say out loud to yourself that you're beautiful, or that you're strong, because you feel like you're crazier, like, that's not accepted? And how often do you interact with everyone during the day and, like, ask how their day is or give them a compliment? Like, just be really brave with how you talk to people. And I think just really the little things. I want people to just say more, you know, just say more to yourself and to other people.
Earlier in our conversation, I asked Hannah about her PTSD. I assume that improves slowly over time, but it's a mental health condition with a lot of unknowns for Hannah, and she's realistic about that.
It gets a little bit easier every day then when you're facing things?
I wouldn't say easier. I would just say, like, and it's not in, like, a chronological order. I would say some days are easier than others and some days are really hard. Mm. And I think that that's life. I think that will probably be my life, and I'm okay with it, because it's given me really, like, beautiful opportunities. And I don't know if it's going to be something that goes away or heals itself. I think it makes for really complicated conversations. It makes for really complicated, like, introspective moments. And it's also my PTSD. I don't let it define me, and I don't let it define anyone else who I meet with this thing that they've been diagnosed with. It's just part of your journey, and it does give me a little comfort to know that, like, yes, this thing happened to you and it really affected you in some way, and it hinders you in some ways, and you're still here. and you're still smiling and talking to yourself in the mirror like a crazy person. And yeah, yeah, it's an interesting one, especially the way society views mental health these days and the way different generations view mental health and stigmas. So it's one I'm still kind of trying to make sense of.
I didn't ask Hannah whether or not she's still working her way down her bucket list or whether she's crumpled it all up. And the more I think about it, I don't think it really matters. Hannah was 5 days fresh from surgery when we talked. She's still reeling, digesting, thinking about everything she's been through in the past year and a half. But she knows now that life has a way of pushing through, even when you're busy checking boxes. And for now, she's enjoying the life she's building in New Hampshire and telling her story in the hopes that you'll share yours too.
Man, I don't know. I think just people just should keep telling their story because it's always going to be interesting to someone. And I really believe that there's this like magic in the world that you can either choose to believe in or not. And I think if everyone like looked at themselves as the luckiest person in the world, they'd feel luckier every day, right? Like little things.
Big thank you to Hannah for sharing your story with me while it was so fresh. You can learn more and see some photos of her, as well as a few photos I took of her on her little walk, via the episode landing page at she-explorers.com/podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, Benchmark Maps, Robinhood, and Bombas. All links and codes are listed in the episode landing page and the show notes. If you enjoy listening to She Explorers, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Even better, share this podcast with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. These last couple months, I've been having a lot of fun sharing podcasts with you. And rather than recommending one podcast this week, I'm going to share a link in the show notes to a whole article that the She Explorers and Women on the Road team put together for the podcast that we enjoy listening to in the outdoor space and also in other spaces. If you enjoyed this particular episode of She Explorers, I know you'll like episode 41 of Women on the Road, our sister podcast. It's called On Letting Go and Surfing Rivers, and it's about a professional river surfer named Brittany Parker and how a traumatic brain injury changed her course for now. There are a lot of overlaps in theme to Hannah's story. We'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, connect with us in our She Explores podcast Facebook group. Music is by Kay Angle and Jason Shaw, using a Creative Commons Attributions license. Until next week, have fun out there.